Chapter 23.
So, I said, what's your plan?
Anea looked up from the book she was reading.
Who says that I have a plan?
I straddled a chair. It's less than an hour until we pop out in the Parvati system, I said. A week ago you said that we needed a plan in case they know we're coming. So what's the plan? Anea sighed and closed the book. A. Bettick had come up the stairway to the library, and now he joined us at the table, actually sitting with us, which was unusual for him.
I'm not sure I have a plan, said the girl.
I'd been afraid of this. The week had passed pleasantly enough. The three of us had read a lot, talked a lot, played a lot. Anea was excellent at chess, good at go, and deadly at poker. And the days had passed without incident. Many times I had tried to press her on her plans. Where did she plan to go? Why choose Renaissance Vector? Was finding ousters part of her quest? But her answers, while polite, were always vague. What Anea showed great talent for was getting me talking. I hadn't known many children. Even when I was a child myself, there were few others in our caravan group, and I rarely enjoyed their company, since Grandam was infinitely more interesting to me. But the children and teenagers I'd encountered over the years had never shown this much curiosity or ability to listen. Anea got me describing my years as a shepherd. She showed special interest in my apprenticeship as a landscape architect. She asked 1,000 questions about my river barge days and hunting guide days. In truth, it was only my soldiering days that she did not show much interest in. What she had seemed especially interested in was my dog. Although even discussing Izzy, about raising her, training her as a bird dog, about her death, upset me quite a bit. I noticed that she could even get A. Bettick talking about his centuries of servitude, and here I often joined in the patient listening. The android had seen and experienced amazing things, different worlds, the settling of Hyperion with Sad King Billy, the Shrike's early rampages across Equus, the final pilgrimage that the old poet had made famous, even the decades with Martin Silenus turned out to be fascinating. But the girl said very little. On our fourth evening out from Hyperion, she admitted that she had come through the Sphinx into her future not just to escape the Pack's troops hunting for her then, but to seek out her own destiny. As a messiah? I said, intrigued. Anea laughed.
No, she said, as an architect.
I was surprised. Neither the Cantos nor the old poet himself had said anything about the so-called one who teaches earning a living as an architect. Anea had shrugged.
It's what I want to do. In my dream, the one who could teach me lives in this era. So here I came.
The one who could teach you? I said. I thought that you were the one who teaches. Anea had flopped back onto the hollow pit cushions and cocked her leg over the back of the couch.
Rawl, how could I possibly teach anyone anything? I'm 12 standard years old and I've never been off Hyperion before this. Hell, I never left the continent of Equus until this week. What do I have to teach?
I had no answer to that.
I want to be an architect, she said. And in my dream, the architect who can train me is somewhere out there.
She waggled her fingers at the outer hull, but I understood her to mean the old hegemony web, where we were heading.
Who is he? I said. Or she.
He, said Anea. And I don't know his name.
What world is he on? I asked.
I don't know.
Are you sure this is the right century? I asked, trying to keep the irritation out of my voice.
Yeah. Maybe, I think so.
Anea rarely acted petulant during the days I spent with her that week, but her voice seemed perilously close to that now.
And you just dreamed about this person?
She sat up in the cushions.
Not just dreamed, she said then. My dreams are important to me. They're sort of more than dreams.
She broke off.
You'll see.
I tried not to sigh aloud.
What happens after you become an architect?
She chewed on a fingernail.
It was a bad habit I planned on breaking her of.
What do you mean?
I mean the old poets expecting big things of you. Being the Messiah is just one part. When does that kick in?
Rawl, she said, rising to go down to her fugue cubby. No offense, but why don't you just fuck off and leave me alone?
She had apologized for that crudity later, but as we sat at a table an hour from translation into a strange star system, I was curious if my question about her plan would elicit the same response. It did not. She started to chew a nail, caught herself, and said,
"Okay, you're right. We need a plan."
She looked at A. Bettick.
"Do you have one?"
The android shook his head. "Master Silenus and I discussed this many times, Emania, but our conclusion was that if the pack somehow arrived first at our destination, then all was lost. It seems an improbability, though, since the torch ship pursuing us cannot travel more quickly through Hawking space than we can." "I don't know," I said. "Some of the hunters I've guided the past few years talked about rumors that the packs, or the church, had these super-fast ships." A. Bettick nodded. "We have heard similar rumors, M. Endymion, but logic suggests that if the packs had developed such craft, a breakthrough which the hegemony never achieved, by the way, then there seems little reason that they would not have outfitted their warships and mercantilis vessels with such a drive."
Anea tapped the table. "It doesn't really matter how they get there first," she said. "I've dreamed that they will. I've been considering plans, but..."
"What about the Shrike?" I said. Anea glanced sideways at me.
"What about it?"
"Well," I said, "it provided a pretty convenient deus ex machina for us on Hyperion, so I just thought that if it could..."
"Damn it, Rawl," cried the girl. "I didn't ask that creature to kill those people on Hyperion. I wish to God it hadn't."
I know, I said, touching her sleeve to calm her. A. Bettick had cut down several of the consul's old shirts for her, but her wardrobe was still meager. I knew that she had been upset about the carnage during our escape. She later admitted that it had been part of the reason for her sobbing that second night out. "I'm sorry," I said sincerely. "I didn't mean to be flippant about the... thing. I just thought that if someone tried to stop us again, maybe..."
"No," said Anea. "I've dreamed that someone tries to stop us from getting to Renaissance Vector. But I haven't dreamed that the Shrike helps us. We have to come up with our own plan."
"What about the core?" I said tentatively. It was the first time I'd mentioned the Techno Core since she had brought it up that first day. Anea seemed lost in thought, or at least she ignored my question.
"If we're going to get ourselves out of whatever trouble might be waiting for us, it will have to be our doing. Or maybe..." She turned her head. "Ship?"
"Yes, Emania."
"Have you been listening to this conversation?"
"Of course, Emania."
"Do you have any ideas that could help us?"
"Help you to avoid capture if Pak's ships are waiting for you?"
"Yeah," said Anea, her voice irritable. She frequently lost patience with the ship.
"Not any original ideas," said the ship. "I have been trying to remember how the consul avoided the local authorities when we were just passing through a system."
"And?" said Anea.
"Well, as I have mentioned, my memory is not as complete as it should be."
"Yes, yes," said Anea, "but do you remember any clever ways you avoided local authorities?"
"Well, primarily by outrunning them," said the ship. "As we have discussed previously, the ouster modifications were to the containment field and the fusion drive. The latter changes allow me to reach C-plus translation velocities much more quickly than standard spin ships. Or so it was when I last traveled between the stars."
A. Bettick folded his hands and spoke to the same bulkhead area that Anea had been watching.
"You are saying that if the authorities, in this case the Pak ships, left from the planet Parvati or near it, you would be able to make the translation to Renaissance Vector before they could intercept us?"
"Most assuredly," said the ship.
How long will a turnaround take? I asked.
Turnaround?
The time in system before we can spin up to the quantum jump to Renaissance Vector system, I said.
37 minutes, said the ship. Which includes reorientation, navigation checks, and system checks. What if a pack ship is waiting right there when we spin down? Asked Ania. Do you have any ouster modifications that could help us?
Not that I can think of, said the ship.
You know of the enhanced containment fields, but they are still no match for a warship's weapons.
The girl sighed and leaned on the table.
I've been over this and over this, but I don't see how it can help.
A. Bedick looked thoughtful, but then again he always looked thoughtful.
During the time we were concealing and caring for the ship, he said, one other ouster modification became apparent.
What's that? I said.
A. Bedick gestured downward toward the hollow pit level below us.
They enhanced the ship's morphing ability. The way it can extrude the balcony is one example. Its ability to extend wings during atmospheric flight. It is able to open each separate living level to atmosphere, thus bypassing the old airlock entrance if necessary.
Neat, said Ania, but I don't see how that would help, unless the ship can morph to the point of passing itself off as a Pax torch ship or something. Can you do that, ship?
No, Ania, said the soft male voice.
The ousters carried out some fascinating piezodynamic engineering on me, but there is still the conservation of mass to reckon with.
After a second of silence.
I am sorry, Ania. Just a silly idea, said Ania.
Then she sat straight up. It was so obvious that something had occurred to her that neither A. Bedick nor I interrupted her train of thought for 2 minutes. Finally, she said,
Ship?
Yes, Ania?
You're able to morph an airlock or a simple opening anywhere on your hull?
Almost anywhere, Ania. There are communications pods and certain drive-related areas in which I could not.
But on the living decks? Interrupted the girl. You could just open them the way you let the upper hull go transparent?
Yes, Ania.
Would the air rush out if you did that?
The ship's voice sounded mildly shocked as it answered.
I would not allow that to happen, Ania. As with the piano balcony, I would preserve the integrity of all external fields so that...
But you could open each deck, not just the airlock, and depressurize it?
The girl's persistence was new to me then. It is familiar now.
Yes, Ania.
A. Bedick and I listened without comment. I could not speak for the android, but I had no idea where the kid was headed with all this. I leaned toward her. Is this part of a plan? I said. Ania smiled crookedly. It was what I would later think of as her mischievous smile.
It's too primitive to be a plan, she said. And if my assumptions about why the Pax wants me are wrong, well, it won't work.
The mischievous smile took on a wry twist.
It probably wouldn't work anyway.
I glanced at my wrist. We have 45 minutes until we spin down and find out if someone's waiting, I said. Do you want to share your plan that wouldn't work? The girl began speaking. She did not talk long. When she was finished, the android and I looked at each other. You're right, I said to her. It's not much of a plan and it wouldn't work. Ania's smile did not falter. She took my hand and turned my wrist so that my chronometer was face up.
We have 41 minutes, she said. Come up with a better one.